All right, we're going to give this a try. See what happens. I don't know if it's going to work. We're going to give it a try. Here we go. It is the news, according to me. Oh, well, yes, here we are this morning. It's afternoon, actually. It's Monday afternoon. It is 5 p.m. Central Time, which means it is 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's how late this is getting going. But it is getting going, nonetheless. And I am here to tell you that I have a lot of things to talk about. We have a lot going on. A lot of hopefully very positive outlook to some things, it appears. So that's what we're working on right now. I'm going to work through some of that. We have just a few things to talk about. We got some callers. I'm actually on the boat today. I'm on the boat this afternoon. I was going to try to put this show out last night. I was just absolutely exhausted. I couldn't even do the show from wherever I was. Green Bay. I was in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And, of course, part of the reason I was exhausted is because I didn't have any Chick-fil-A there. There is a Chick-fil-A, but it... It's closed on Sundays. I was there on Sunday. I ended up having to go to Longhorn, which is great, but that was kind of a large meal, and I pretty much was exhausted after that. I was just I got done pretty early in the day, actually, but it was just too much. So I didn't do a show. So all the logistics of pulling everything out and making everything work and having it all happen. So I am on the boat right now. It's a lot later than I had planned. By the time I get to the boat and get everything set up, it takes a little while. So, but it's nice to be here on the boat. It's nice enough. It's perfect evening here. It's going to be a very, very nice evening here sleeping on this boat tonight. I got to get up tomorrow morning about 3:30 in the morning, get myself going. I'm going to end up in central Wisconsin tomorrow after I go to Baltimore in the morning and get some things done, and then I'm going to end up overnight in central Wisconsin. So I'll be back home again. The show will be, tomorrow's show will be late in the day, unless I do a second show today for tomorrow. That just doesn't work very well with the way I set things up, but I think what I'm going to be doing is doing a show tomorrow afternoon. Possibly doing a show tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon that ends up being Wednesday's show. Because I actually get done kind of late on Wednesday, so I'll have to see how that works out. I think it's going to be the best way to do it. Thursday morning, this will be a regular show. Thursday and Friday morning, I'll be back to having regular shows on those two mornings, and we'll go from there. Anyway, that's the plan. We'll see how that works out, and we'll go from there. In the meantime, we'll have this little ditty, and then you'll be able to. Maybe I can just play this. I think I can just play this from. Let's see if this works. It may not be loud enough. I'm going to try to play this from my other laptop. You may not be able to hear it. I don't know how this is going to work. I'm going to try it. I'm going to have to dub over this because it just may not even work. We'll have to see if this even works. Here it goes. This is the short version. Welcome to the news, according to me. Pull up a chair, I'll share what I believe. I've done my reading, I've got thoughts or two. But I'm not your doctor, so don't go blaming you. Financial advisor. These are my opinions, not the gospel truth. Entertainment only, baby. That's the news. The news according to me and me alone. Now let's get started. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Welcome. It is, like I said, it is late in the day already. I still haven't had dinner. Got to get that done. So it's going to be kind of a short show. I'm just going to jump right into what the callers are calling about today. Elena's at the top of the list, or she just came up on the top of the list. I'm not sure why, but she's right here. The historian of the bunch. By the way, the podcast app is podcastcaller.com. App is out there, ready to sell. It's you can't buy it yet. It's a trial program. You can sign up for the trial plan. The actual payment deal in the background should be able to get going here in the next week or so. I think there's a 2-week free trial you can sign up for if you need to. And then Yeah, then you go from there. It's kind of a fun little gizmo if you have a podcast. And I'm going to be having a podcast about the podcast caller. It's going to be just using the podcast caller with some other. It's going to have some other other features going to be having on there. And as those features get developed, we'll be using them on this show as well. But it should be kind of interesting because some of the things we're going to be doing is interviewing the panels of individuals so they can start talking to each other. With the various different kinds of agents that will be on there. And it'll be kind of interesting because they're all going to have different... The point there is that... That's really loud. We're going to have different... one of the things we're going to do is we're going to have different... brains behind it. In other words, different LLMs. Well, one of them we're going to be powered by a Grok, which is Elon Musk's deal. More of a SpaceX kind of Tesla kind of... LLM model, in other words, an AI model, and then the other one is going to be powered by Anthropic, which is Claude. Another one will be powered by ChatGPT, and then another one probably powered by, but maybe have one powered by DeepSeek. So you're going to have all these different AI versions that'll be powering the bots behind the speaking. So it should be kind of interesting. It should make it an interesting concept. To work with all those, because we should get some very different, I would say, some very different outcomes from each of them. Should have some different opinions. To see all of them arguing with each other, and of course, we're going to also have some issues. Well, just to be able to do some interviews with just individuals, different individuals from different times in history, just kind of a straw man composite of a person from the 1800s or the 1900s or whatever, 1776 or whatever it is, whatever's happening at that time. We'll have some of those kinds of things. So it should be kind of interesting. To work with those kinds of things. And that's what the podcast caller app is all about. Anyway, getting into it, that's as much as you're going to get for an advertisement on this show, by the way, is anything you're going to ever get. Normally, I don't do any advertising, and I don't have any sponsors. The only sponsor I've got is the podcast caller app, and that's because we use it. Oh, people understand it. Anyway, that's all I got going on. Elena dropped out of the thing. Let's go back here. Let's see if I can get Elena to kind of come in and make a comment. See what she has to say. Hopefully this comes in well. I think I got the volume up high enough. You should be able to hear what she has to say. Let's see what she has to say. So go ahead there, Elena. Just go ahead and say whatever you want.
Kevin, yeah. Love what you do.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Historical perspective here. Okay. Trump ending this Iran conflict reminds me of Nixon opening China in 1972.
Oh, really?
Everyone said it was impossible. Yeah, critics screamed betrayal, but it transformed global politics for decades. Yeah. We're watching similar, only Nixon could go to China dynamics play out. Do you think this Iran deal could be Trump's lasting foreign policy legacy the way China was for Nixon?
Yes and no. I think that it will be a lasting legacy. However, I also think that it's going to be I think it's only part of that legacy. The Monroe Doctrine, I think that he's following, they're calling it the Donroe Doctrine now. I think that those things are going to be kind of a part of that. I think you're right. I think it is part of his legacy. I think I'm not, and there's, it all depends on how this all shakes out. Now, Obama tried to do this and tried to negotiate with Iran. However, he did not do the only thing that Iran knows. When you're dealing with mullahs, now I'm not a geopolitical expert, but one of the things that I do understand about the culture there is that they only respect power, and demonstrating that by militarily, that is, I think, what has shaped, I think, some of the ability to negotiate. Now, you almost have to bring them to that point to be able to negotiate with them on a real clear path. You can't just throw money at them, pay them off, and expect them to live up to certain obligations just by paying them or just by having some kind of a negotiation like that. It just doesn't work. It's just not the kind of culture that they are of. It's not what they're about. And that's my understanding. Now, I could be way off on that. I don't like that. I don't like that kind of thing. I don't like that. That's what we have to do in order to negotiate with them. But that is my understanding. That's the only thing they understand. And does that make sense? I guess because you have the whole you know, the Maduro thing, everything that went on in Venezuela, and people that Venezuelans are loving it, the fact that they got Maduro out of there. And there are other countries that are liking the fact that we're the ones taking the point on Iran as well, but they're not saying it very loudly. They're not terrible. Now, there's Iranians who are. The traditional Iranians who are just the general populace there, who aren't a part of the radical Islam group, they are. But they're upset. That's kind of where I stand on it.
I get what you're saying about power dynamics, but I'd push back a little.
Okay,
history shows us that's oversimplified, even in places with authoritarian cultures.
Oh, I had it set on short. Well, go ahead and expand a little bit more on that. Tell me more about the history of it. Maybe you could give some examples of that kind of thing, if you would, for example. Can you look up some examples?
You're touching on something real about how regimes like Iran's stay in power.
Yeah.
They need external threats to unite people behind them. But I'd say the Venezuelan situation actually proves your point backwards. Maduro's still standing. Partly he can point to U.S. pressure as validation of his narrative, not despite it. And look, when you go back to how the Monroe Doctrine actually worked in the 1800s, Europe respected it not just because we had military might, but because we had economic leverage and a compelling alternative vision. That matters just as much as the stick.
I totally agree there. That is a good point. It is not just about military leverage. Maduro's gone. I don't know where you're getting that idea that he's still standing. He's still alive. That he's not in power anymore. The issues with Venezuela are. The regime is kind of still there, but it has fallen apart. It has no power anymore in it whatsoever. It's a very interesting situation where their big thing there, their big leverage in Venezuela was oil. They don't have that leverage anymore. That is absolutely not a part of what they got anymore. So I think there's many ways to look at that. But you're right. There's economic leverage in the long run, in the long haul, in the long game, has a lot more to do. And here we are, as we talk about this, one of the biggest players in the world economic situation right now is China. And so it is, I think, in many ways, I think we're looking at a massive shift in the political leverage within our hemisphere. What most people don't realize, this is something that I think a lot of people don't understand this or haven't been aware of it, is that China is involved in South America and as well as in Africa. They are pushing their way in, making investments in things because of the resources that are available down there and also in Africa. And they are pushing their way in financially and leadership-wise and making all kinds of deals with folks in South America and Africa, so even Central America. So it's kind of a very interesting situation that we've gotten ourselves into with this whole thing. So we'll have to see how it all pans out to some degree. It's a good subject. I think we could talk about that on the whole show. I think, but due to the nature of the fact that we got to go kind of short on this show. Makes it a little more difficult. Let's check in with Artie. Artie's kind of the deep diver guy.
Hey, Kevin. Hey. Fantastic show as always.
Of course.
Quick technical question about this Iran deal Trump just signed.
Oh, yeah.
I'm seeing reports the Strait of Hormuz is reopening Friday and oil prices dropped to March 5 levels. Can you break down the actual economic data here? What's the real impact on our gas prices and supply chains when you crunch the numbers on this blockade ending?
Well, this is going to, it was already, prices were already starting to fall. From what I saw and what I'm seeing around the country, prices are already starting to fall. So this is like Christmas morning in some ways for the economic situation and for oil prices, gas prices around the country. Consumer confidence is going to go back up eventually. There's going to be an absolute positive effect that this is all going to have. Now, I know that Israel went off and bombed something in Beirut right after practically right after this announcement came out. They almost on the same day. That will also have an effect. there was some speculation that maybe Israel kind of sabotaged the whole agreement with Iran. I don't think it did. There's the dynamics there that play out. Again, I'm not a geopolitical expert, but I do believe the dynamics, the way this is going to play out. I believe there's, if there really is an agreement, if the Iranians, which I think that they're going to have to capitulate with what's happening, I just don't see any way around it at this point. The straits are open. The biggest thing is the straits are open. And that's whether they agree to that or not. That's happening. And it's and what they don't know is, I guess, apparently we snuck a bunch of oil out. We snuck a bunch of boats out of Iran with their oil, millions of barrels, without them knowing about it. And, of course, Trump, after the mission was done, he told everybody about it. But it's and that's part of the transparency. I mean, whether you're not like Trump or not, he tends to disclose a lot of things, and people, there are people on the left who don't like the fact that he just always telling secrets, telling our national security secrets. He's just being transparent. It does kind of make me kind of cringe occasionally, but at the same time, it's like, you know what? We should know this. There needs to be transparency, and there needs to be an open book about what's happening. So I really don't have much of a problem with it, unless people's lives are being endangered and that kind of thing. That's a whole other story, but. At this point, I think the military has done an excellent job. All the forces that are involved have just done an incredible, interesting job. What's going on there? But I think it does have an effect on what's happening worldwide. Now, I just with all the investment that's coming into this country, with the infrastructure that's being built, with everything that's happening in the private sector, and on top of that, having this kind of it's going to be a close to the conflict there. I think we're going to see a tremendous amount of better things in the days ahead, especially with energy prices dropping. That's what's been driving up the prices of everything else, because everything's shipped, everything that's grown, everything that's shipped, everything that's built has to have energy, and it has to be shipped. So it's kind of one of those things where diesel prices, when they come down, it's going to have a definite effect on the economy all around. That's just my take on it. By the way, I'm sipping on Chick-fil-A sweet tea.
Look, technically speaking, you're right that energy prices are the through line here. Everything from shipping costs to manufacturing gets compressed when oil drops, so the multiplier effect is real and significant. But I'd pump the brakes a bit on the geopolitical read. The Israel-Beirut situation and any Iran agreement are operating on totally different timelines and incentive structures. So attributing one directly to sabotaging the other assumes way more coordination than typically happens in that region. The transparency angle you're hitting on is the interesting part, though. Yeah, operational details getting aired publicly creates real security friction, but you're identifying the actual trade-off most people miss.
Yeah, that is the point. I think that having the ability to... Just to have the ability to have the American people, and I think, I can't remember who said it. Abraham Lincoln or George Washington who said, "Let the people know the truth, and the nation will be saved." I think that is part of that is transparency, and as long as it's not dangerous transparency, I think that's important. I think it's important to have most of all. I think I'd rather err on the side of transparency than to err on the side of secrecy and power. Too much secrecy within power is a big issue. It just becomes a real issue, in my opinion. But that's kind of where I fall with that whole thing.
Actually, that quote you're referencing, I want to be straight with you. I can't pin down exactly which Lincoln or Washington said that specific line, so I don't want to validate it without knowing the source. But your core point stands. Diesel and fuel cascading through the economy is a real multiplier. And yeah, the transparency principle matters more than most people give it credit for.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, you're basically agreeing with me. Which is fine. Let's talk to Skip and see what Skip has to say. The skeptic. Let's see if he has anything interesting to talk about today.
Kevin, my man, yes, gotta push back on something.
Okay, go ahead.
Everyone's celebrating this Iran peace deal like it's the second coming. But hold up. Didn't Obama try something similar and it fell apart?
Yeah,
what makes us think Tehran will actually honor this agreement long term? I want this to work, but color me skeptical until we see actual compliance 6 months from now.
Yeah, you know, that is a good question. Are we going to see it fulfilled and see compliance? Like you said, Obama tried to do the same thing. I think the difference here is that there was power leverage behind it. There was economic leverage behind what we're doing now. Obama didn't have any leverage. It was just all this talk and agreements. And there was all this maneuvering and shuffling of the shell game that they could easily avoid. They could easily play around that game. They played him, I think, in my opinion. I can't remember who the person was who was actually the ambassador at that time to Iran and who was doing it. It wasn't the Secretary of State, I believe. I think it was Hillary Clinton during that time. And I just know that all the negotiations that were going on, all the things that were happening, from what I remember of the whole situation, it was all just phony, kind of portrayal, paperwork, kind of here, this for that, a whole lot of deception going on, really on both sides. But I think that Iranians are known for being chess players, and I think that is one of the things that they see those kinds of things, I think, as part of that whole process, in my opinion. But that's kind of how I see it anyway. What do you think, Mr. Skeptical Man? Go ahead.
Well, hold on. You're mixing up your timeline there a bit. Hillary was Secretary of State early in Obama's first term, but the Iran nuclear deal negotiations really ramped up later with John Kerry handling most of that heavy lifting.
Kerry. That's right.
Now, I hear what you're saying about leverage, and I get the skepticism, but let's not give short shrift to what actually happened. Whether you think it was good policy or not, that deal did get signed, and it held for years until we pulled out of it.
Well, I beg to differ on that one. I appreciate you correcting me on that. That was John Kerry, who was the one who was behind that. Now, John Kerry, interestingly enough, I believe his daughter married someone from Iran. So he has some ties to some folks there, some family ties, which you could say, in my opinion, is a bit of a conflict of interest, in my opinion, but that's just my opinion on that one. Now, as far as the deal holding, no, it did not hold. They were this whole time, they were not supposed to be. I don't know how you define holding. It was there. It was in place. But the whole time they were working on their nuclear program, and that was part of the deal, that they would not develop nuclear weapons, and they were absolutely developing nuclear weapons. If they weren't developing nuclear weapons, then why do they have enriched uranium right now? How is it that they had all those things? Why do they have underground bunkers doing those kinds of things? And why are they bragging about the fact that they do? That makes really not a lot of sense to think that to say that it held just meant that it was in place. We backed out because they weren't upholding it. That's the reason we backed out. It wasn't they just weren't living up to their end of that with regard to nuclear weapons and nuclear enrichment. So that's the way I see it. We can beg to differ on that one.
Now, hold on. You're conflating a couple things here that need untangling.
No, I don't
think
so.
The deal actually held for the years it was in place.
No, it
did. Inspectors verified Iran was complying
until they
withdrew in 2018. They ramped back up their enrichment. That's the timeline you got to keep straight, not some fictional compliance failure that happened while it was active.
Yeah, well, I beg to differ, sir, because the reason is because they didn't just ramp it up in 2018 and all of a sudden it was there. And then, of course, all during the Obama or during the Biden administration, you have to understand the timeline. He's talking about timeline. The time it takes to get to where they were at was a lot longer than just 6 years. So that's the whole point is they were never upfront and honest about where they were at with their timeline. It appeared that they were agreeing with it and it was holding. It was not holding. That's my whole point here, is that they were very deceptive in everything that they were doing. They had inspectors coming in. No question. They had inspectors coming in. And you turn right around and they were fooling that they didn't allow the inspectors in to just free reign anywhere they wanted to go. Where were all these? They didn't even, the inspectors never got into the bunkers. In the places we bombed, I think early on in Trump's term, those bunker busters or whatever you want to call them, the bombing that they did there. So I think that there's a bit of a skew there on what people think about that. Anyway, onward and upward. Let's talk to Chloe, see what she has to say. And
oh my gosh, Kevin, did you see Tom Brady and his ex Bridget reunited at their son's graduation?
No, I didn't see that.
So sweet. But also, OMG, that helicopter crash in Rio killed singer Oliver Tree.
Yeah.
I literally was just listening to his stuff.
Yeah.
This weekend was wild between that and the Knicks winning. Like, fans were torching buses in Times Square. Crazy energy everywhere.
Yeah. I don't know who Oliver Tree is. I maybe have heard his songs. I don't know. I'll have to look that up. I just found out about this morning. As far as that Oliver Tree was part of that and that he's some kind of a singer. I didn't know anything about it, or about him. Probably if I heard one of his songs or knew the name of one of his songs, maybe you know the names of some of his songs, obviously, but I don't know. That's really sad. Now, there was also a crash, airplane crash from a parachute skydiving place in Missouri that apparently, from what I have heard, initial reports, I haven't heard the whole report yet, I've only heard bits and pieces. It sounds like the plane was trying to turn back to the field. Apparently, they had some kind of an engine failure or some kind of an issue. They were trying to get back to the field and land. Which is not the right thing to do, by the way. You have to be in a very good position, typically, to get back in onto a runway once you take off from a field. That is not common practice. They typically say go straight ahead or find someplace ahead of you to land, rather than trying to make steep turns in a slow, underpowered situation. It takes an exceptionally good pilot to keep from piling it in that respect, and especially just to get it back to the. I mean, you have to be at best glide speed immediately, and then start your turn. Turns have to be very precise, very exact, and then you still don't have much of an opportunity. You're going to be landing downwind if you do get there, because theoretically you should have been taking off into the wind. So it's just a very precarious situation. So I think that's what happened. I don't know. I haven't seen any NTSB reports. I haven't seen any kind of actual official reports of anything that happened there. But that's my understanding of what happened. So, yeah, a very sad situation, in my opinion. Yeah, I don't know why it didn't take. It's not. Chloe is not wanting to talk to me, I guess. She's not going to be able to talk to me. Interesting. So yeah, I don't know what happened there. My podcast caller quit working or what? That's not normal. I think I may have accidentally. Well, we'll just have to do that. Let's try Chloe again. Maybe she's. I don't know what's going on with her. Oh well. We'll go from there. Let's try. Maybe if I just refresh the page, it might work better. Let's see what happens. You know what? My internet might be going down. Well, that's not good. I may have lost the internet here. Page is not refreshing. Let's see if I can get.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, there we go. It's working now. All right, let's see if I can get it back. Let's see if I can get any kind of response. She's probably not going to respond because of that. The whole thing with that whole thing happening. It's just that was a sad situation. There's just sorry to hear about it. But so there you go. That's all we got with that. I think. All right, it seems to be back working again. However, I've lost context on the show now. Of course, that's going to be interesting. But let's go to Elena. Let's get her in here and see what she has to say. Go ahead, Elena. You're on the air. Call her. Go ahead. Good. Call her. Oops. It's not connected. There we go. Let's try it again. Try this again. All right. Seems to be working now. Oh, yeah, it's working now. Okay, let's call Elena. And let's let Elena call in here and see what she has to say. Go ahead, Elena.
Kevin,
yeah.
Love what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Historical perspective here.
Oh, I think
Trump
you,
ending this Iran conflict reminds me of Nixon opening China in 19... 19-
yeah, we already talked to you. Never mind then. We already talked to you. We talked to Chloe. Let's see, we talked to everybody. Chloe was the last one, I think. Let's see if Chloe has anything to say.
Tom Brady and his ex, Bridget, reunited at their...
Yeah, so she already talked to us. So let's see what else. I think that's it. That's all we got now. We could... they're both on the air now. I think I may have just busted my... Must have broken the program again. Let's go to Billy Bob.
There, Kevin. What's all this about some kind of calling app thing? I don't understand what you be talking about.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the podcast caller app. I think you misunderstood what you're supposed to say there. just a few technical difficulties. Yeah, there's the podcast caller app. So the podcast caller app, what we have here is, I see. It was supposed to say, howdy there, cave-in. What's all this about some kind of call-in app thing? That's what he's supposed to say. Okay, anyway, the podcast caller app. Again, I'm just going to finish up with this. Of course, it's breaking down. Obviously, it has to have internet. And the internet here on the boat, I've got marina internet. It's just not the best in the world, depending on how many people are using it at the time. Right now, on a Monday afternoon, it's not too bad. Weekends, or internet here, they don't have much bandwidth. So that's been probably part of the biggest problem with it they've got here. But I think they've even got a separate system now that works, supposed to work better. I'm not sure. They got like two different Wi-Fis you can sign on to now, I think. But this one's the basic one, and that's what we're using. So there you go. That's the story of everything about it. In the meantime, this podcast caller app is going to be over the next 6 to 8 months, year. You'll see more and more improvements on the podcast caller app. I think actually most of the developments as things are going here, it makes it easier to develop. The initial launch of the podcast caller app took a lot of effort. Amazon Web Services and everything else that has to happen behind the scenes. All the infrastructure is there now. So just adding different features and doing those kinds of things are going to be, and enhancements for a better experience, are going to be just that much easier to do now because it's all in place now. It's just a matter of making improvements and getting feedback from podcast people who are doing podcasts, that kind of thing, podcasters. So working on all that, and I think as we go forward with it, there will be a lot of back and forth with a lot of people who use the program, and hopefully they'll give me a lot of good feedback and get some real interesting things happening with the whole process. So that's the podcast caller thing. Does that make more sense to you there, Billy Bob? I hope you can understand that. It's kind of one of those things. By the way, what do you think? He's thinking. He's scratching his head. I can tell he's scratching his head. He's taking off his hat.
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, here we go.
Marina internet ain't exactly blazing fast, is it?
No, it's not. No. No.
Look, you're doing the right thing building this thing out proper instead of rushing it.
Yeah.
Because half-baked apps just frustrate everybody on both ends.
Yeah.
6 to 8 months to get it right beats launching something tomorrow that keeps dropping calls like a bad connection.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. All right, well, thanks, Billy Bob. Appreciate you calling in. We're gonna wrap up the show here. We got one last thing we're gonna work on. Let's see if I can.
It's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
Yeah, according to me,
it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me,
it's the news.
Yeah, it's the news. According to me.
Once again, thanks for listening, folks. I will do my best to be on here again tomorrow afternoon, from what I know, probably from central Wisconsin, Wausau, Wisconsin area, that particular area. So we're going to be probably Stevens Point, I think it's Mosinee, that area. Well, God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your day. In the meantime, I will see ya.